Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to drivers that share Mazda's passion that cars make driving matter. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. From the DiGiorgio Campus Center on the campus of Winthrop University in Rock Hill, this is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. For Democrats, Iowa and New Hampshire are in the rearview mirror. Now all eyes are on kind of Nevada, but really South Carolina, and their first in the South primary. This state has played a pivotal role in previous nomination contests because of its sizable number of African-American voters. Former Vice President Joe Biden has been counting on them to push him up in the rankings, and they may, or they could, end his candidacy. Indeed, there's a lot at stake for multiple candidates here as they try to convince voters that they are the best one to go toe-to-toe with Donald Trump. So what do South Carolina voters want? What messages might be resonating with them? What do these candidates have to do to break through before Nevada and Super Tuesday? Well, for answers, we're going to turn to an expert panel. Dr. Scott Huffman has invited us to his home. He's a professor of political science and director of the Winthrop Poll here at Winthrop University. Thanks for inviting us. Appreciate it. Also with us is Meg Kennard, national politics reporter for the Associated Press.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Gib Knotts has come up here from the College of Charleston, where he too is a professor of political science and co-author of First in the South, Why South Carolina's Presidential Primary Matters. Welcome back to the program.
Thank you.
And Antoine Seawright, I believe, is a Winthrop alum, and he is a Democratic strategist and CBS News political contributor. Thank you for being here as well.
Thank you.
So, since you drove all the way from the College of Charleston, and because of the name of your book, I'm talking to you first, Gibbs. I'm going to ask you
Thanks for the plug. Thanks for the book plug.
Well, you're welcome. I'm going to ask, here's another one. I'm going to ask the obvious question. Why does South Carolina's primary matter?
So it matters for different reasons for Republicans and for Democrats. And since we have a Democratic primary coming up, I'll sort of take the Democratic side of it. South Carolina adds critical diversity to the early primary states. You've got Iowa and New Hampshire, two of the states with the least diverse states in the country, starting things off. In South Carolina in 2016, about 60% of primary voters were African American. And so, you know, given the importance of African American voters to the Democratic Party, it's critical to have some balance. It also is a state that's a little more moderate than the National Democratic Party as a whole. And so it provides some, you know, ideological balance as well.
So when Joe Biden said in Columbia last night, or Tuesday night, whenever the election was in Iowa, in New Hampshire, when he said, don't count me out yet, I'm paraphrasing here, because they've only been two states. And he was talking really to the African-American audience.
Right, the two of the least diverse states in right. Two of the least representative states, even for Democratic voters. And so South Carolina is very, very different. And just because you can win in Iowa and New Hampshire doesn't mean you can win in
right.
South Carolina.
So he was right when he said that.
He was correct.
Yeah, but I would say there's a second part of that, too. In addition to the first test of minority support, which is critical when, you know, that's a huge block of your coalition, we are the first measure of enthusiasm among minority voters as well. Because you look at 2016, obviously you see, you know, Hillary Clinton, African Americans lined up behind Hillary Clinton. She spanked Bernie Sanders to the tune, I think, 47 points mm-hmm. past him. But turnout for 2016 was dramatically lower in that than the turnout for the Democratic right. presidential primary 2008. And that basically was a harbinger of what was happening in the general election, where African American turnout was down 7%. So it's not just who, and I think Biden said the black and the brown voters are going to support, it's enthusiasm for a candidate as well.
Antoine.
I think we have to always look back through the lens of history. Since 1992, no Democratic candidate has gone on to be our party's nominee without winning the South Carolina primary, with one exception in 2004, when I was a freshman here at Winthrop. In 2004, when neighboring son John Edwards beat John Kerry in the presidential primary. And then the second thing, no candidate since 1992 has gone on to be our party's nominee without wide, broad support from the most loyal constituency in this party, African-American voters. And while Iowa may get attention, New Hampshire may get some praise, and Nevada may get some smiles, the ball game has always been in South Carolina. I remember as a young student in 2008 when I was working for Hillary Clinton on this campus, South Carolina was a launch pad and a safe haven for Barack Obama. I'm convinced he could have won Iowa, but had he stumbled in South Carolina, the country would be different today, and that race would have been different. Had Hillary Clinton stumbled in South Carolina in 2016 here, where I worked for, she never would have gone on to be the historic first woman nominee to represent a major party for president.
Is Joe Biden likely to stumble here, or is he going to get the vote he's hoping for here?
I think Joe Biden has a grip lock on the African-American vote here. And I spoke to the vice president on his way to South Carolina Tuesday night. And the one thing I jokingly said to him, I said, when things are looking to be, when you're looking to be in trouble, you always find yourself going home. Because home, you can find comfort and you can find a blessed assurance. Well, for Joe Biden, that place is South Carolina because trust, relatability, reliability, and dependability. He's always been that to South Carolina voters.
So Antoine is clearly a partisan, but you are not, Meg. And you talk to everybody in the state.
I'm a clear partisan hack.
As a reporter for the Associated Press, what are you hearing as you talk to politicians and to voters?
What I'm hearing is a lot of what we've expressed, that there's a need and a desire among many voters out there to pick somebody who's going to defeat Donald Trump in November. That's not everybody's top answer, but it is an answer that I hear over and over among people who haven't really decided yet. There are still undecided voters. We all get paid to pay attention to this, and we've been paying attention to it for well over a year now. But most people, particularly here in South Carolina, are really just tuning in because the votes are soon, and they are going to need to be making those decisions. But I don't think it can be overstated, as Gibbs hit on, as we've all discussed, the importance of the diversity of the South Carolina electorate. I mean, I was looking at some stuff the other day. There are more African Americans in the city of Sumter, South Carolina, than there are in the entire state of New Hampshire. Sumter, as you guys might know, is not our largest city. So that's one way to kind of just quantify really what we're talking about when we say diversity in South Carolina. Obviously, that black vote is not monolithic, and that's something that I'm continually trying to express in my reporting, which goes out to a national audience, in, you know, reminding people, okay, we talk about black voters, but that's not one group that all will vote for the same person. As Antoine was just noting, Joe Biden does have strong support in that community in South Carolina, but there are other candidates who have been for months building up attention and support within some of those corners here, and so it's going to be interesting for folks like us to watch and see how much of that support remains with Joe Biden when the votes actually come in, and what other candidates perhaps have been able to cleave some of that away, because he has had a long record, a long relationship with South Carolina, but there are other candidates who have been competing for that attention.
When we say the word diversity, it means different things to different people. Keep in mind, we always throw out the African-American number, 61%. I'm very proud of that number. But also 55% women are likely to participate in this primary. Well, we all know women have a very loud voice in the Democratic platform and the nominating
process.
They
are the constituents.
Absolutely.
Of the Democratic
Party. So when we talk about diversity being our strength in South Carolina, it's not just African American voters, it's women too. In the 2018 midterms, there were 1 million between women and people of color vote for Democrats in the general election. I think that says everything about the mood and temperature of this party, particularly in South Carolina.
You want to jump in here, Kim?
All I wanted to say was, you know, I certainly think Antoine's right that Joe Biden is a force to be reckoned with. He's had the February 29th circled on his calendar for a long time. Now it's highlighted, starred. He's ready for the South Carolina primary, but it is an open primary, and we don't register by party, unlike in North Carolina. We don't register by party, and anyone can vote, and there's not a Republican primary on that same day. And so, you know, I think it is possible that somebody who voted for John Kasich or maybe even Marco Rubio last time around in 2016 could show up and consider somebody like Pete Buttigieg and Amy Klobuchar.
I'm glad you brought that up, that it's not like North Carolina. We have a lot of listeners, as you might imagine, right, in North Carolina, and this is not the same rules at play here, Scott. So tell me how this works, because there is no early voting. It's very difficult to vote early in South Carolina.
Well, it's not formally early voting. So basically in North Carolina, you can early vote. You show up at many, many different places and do it. In South Carolina, you have to have an excuse. Now, you make one up. I'm going to be on vacation. My mom's going to be sick, whatever it is. And they'll usually
have to wash my dog.
Right. And so you usually have to go to the county registrar and do that. Last election was the first time I saw several places set up where you could go and cast an absentee ballot. And again, you can vote in any primary as long as they're not on technically 10 years ago, you could vote in both, and they passed a law around that. But you could you have to declare which one you're voting in, but you can switch anything time to time.
So why should South Carolina have such an important role to play? We've been asking questions like, why Iowa? Why New Hampshire, these small states that are not representative of the country? Why do they get to go first? Why should South Carolina have such an important role in this?
Well, because South Carolina is a snapshot of what Super Tuesday will look like. So essentially, we are the alley-oop for the Super Tuesday to be the slam dunk. And that's been very true, again, since 1992. But I want to go back to one point we were speaking about earlier, and it's about who's showing up. The reason Joe Biden has been successful to this point, and I say to this point, is because within the African-American community, he has a strong constituency. Seasoned African-American voters are very decisive and they're very definitive about their support for Joe Biden versus the other candidates. They're fighting for the leftovers or the Twitter voters, the people who make noise on social media but may not always show up.
Meg, I think Joe thought he was going to win in both Iowa and in New Hampshire. I think you assumed he would, but he didn't. And the surprise there, I think, was not just how Bernie Sanders did, but how well Pete Buttigieg did. Will South Carolina voters look at that, maybe voters who were thinking about Biden or even completely sold on Biden,
right,
and now say, well, maybe I should rethink this?
Well, first off, I don't think that Vice President Biden thought he was going to win those two states.
Okay.
I think that he has been managing expectations in some early states, but also heavily focusing on South Carolina. So I'd say that first. But secondly, of all the voters I speak with, they tell me many things, but among them is, we don't care what these other earlier states did. We care about South Carolina, and ultimately, South Carolina is going to do what South Carolina is going to do. For a lot of reasons, as we've just noted, there's a different electorate here, there are different issues at play, and there is, I don't think there's a huge role played by the winners of those first two states. That doesn't mean that the people who won there wouldn't potentially do well here themselves as well, but I don't think that voters are really seriously considering, okay, well, this person was a one or a two, okay, well, they're going to be my choice.
Let me give you an example from 2008. A lot of folks said, oh, well, in South Carolina, African Americans only considered Barack Obama because he won in Iowa. We did a poll of black voters in fall of 2007 and found that Barack Obama was already number one among African American men, and he was equally tied among African American women with him, Hillary Clinton, and undecided. So they were not looking to Iowa.
Anything about what's happened so far in Iowa and New Hampshire surprise you about this year's contest?
Yes, the enthusiasm for pragmatism in states that traditionally may trend to be more liberal. That was very surprising for me, the rise of Mayor Pete and this clomentum that this process is existing. But going back to one point, this lady stopped me in the airport on my way here, and she said to me, we were talking and she read a quote, and she said, Antoine, we could give two flying kites about what voters in Iowa and New Hampshire have done.
I want to come back and talk about pragmatism, because that is that's where the African-American vote has traditionally been like. They've been pragmatic about it. We'll talk about that. Antoine Seawright is with us, along with Gib Knotts, Meg Kennard, and Scott Huffman. We're live from Winthrop University on Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, dedicated to those who believe a car should stir one's emotions and deliver a heightened state of driving. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. We're coming to you from Winthrop University and the DiGiorgio Campus Center with an all-star panel, Scott Huffman from Winthrop University, political scientist here and the director of the Winthrop Poll, Meg Kennard, national politics reporter for the Associated Press, Gib Knotts, drove up here from the College of Charleston. He's a professor of political science there and the author of First in the South, Why South Carolina's Presidential Primary Matters, and Antoine Seawright, a Democratic strategist and a political contributor to CBS News and other outlets. The 538 poll, as of February the 11th, had Joe Biden still ahead of Sanders, though trading down. I think this is national. Steyer, Warren, Bloomberg, Buttigieg were taking up the rear. Now, you do a Winthrop poll, Scott. Do you have you done any polling recently on this?
Well, we did one earlier, and we are literally in the field right now as we record this. And so what we saw before is obviously all the expectations, Biden, you know, strongly ahead. But one of the things we saw that the crowd, you know, came out a little different when you asked earlier is what is most important now. You know, everybody kind of expected, oh, we got to beat Trump, we got to beat Trump. But there was a clear divide among white respondents in the last Winthrop poll and African Americans in the last Winthrop poll of Democrats that white respondents who are more liberal said, beat Trump, no matter what, that's the most important thing. African Americans were far more likely to say they wanted somebody whose values and views matched their own. They wanted trust.
I don't want to get too far off the track here because this is about the South Carolina primary, but I do have two political scientists here. Should this be about defeating Trump for Democrats, given the fact that apparently the rule of law is slipping through our fingers?
Yeah, I mean, I think it has to be that whoever gets the nomination has to put a vision forward that people can get excited about. You know, motivation to get out and can help with turnout, to beat Trump can help with turnout, can help with a lot of things. But if a candidate makes that their only policy, that is not a winning formula.
In 2016, I think African-American voters here in South Carolina supported Hillary over Joe Biden. So why does Joe Biden consider, Meg, this to be his firewall?
2008.
Okay. 2008. I get them. Sure. All these years run together for me. I'm too old.
We've been doing this a long time. Joe Biden has been building relationships here for decades. Every time I see him on the trail, which has been a lot, he talks about his relationship, particularly with Fritz Hollings, who was one of South Carolina's longest-serving politicians. And Vice President Biden talks about how when his wife and daughter were tragically killed in a car accident right before he entered the U.S. Senate, it was Senator Hollings and his wife Pizzi who helped persuade him to actually take his seat instead of grieving and going on to something else more privately. So it's not just that, but it is part of that that keeps Joe Biden tied to South Carolina. He has really been long-term developing these friendships, relationships with politicians even across the aisle. Strom Thurmond was an ally of his, if not always politically, at least somebody with whom he had a strong relationship when they both served in the Senate. And he spoke at Senator Thurmond's funeral. I think that he's referenced that not maybe as much recently during this campaign, but certainly that relationship is there as well. And personally, the Bidens have come here for vacations. Even Jill Biden referenced last night when they were appearing in Columbia how after the death of their son, Beau, South Carolina was a place where the family kind of came to grieve and come together. So for all of those reasons, the Bidens have been tied to this place. And politically, obviously, it's been a place for him to continue to come and campaign during the various times that he's run for office. So he's tied in multiple ways.
I would argue that trust was, while the soil was tilled with all those long-term relationships, the seed wasn't planted for that trust to grow until he became the right-hand man for Barack Obama. You got to remember the who are we going to trust as African Americans to vote for? It was not necessarily Joe Biden who described Barack Obama as clean and articulate and stuck his foot in his mouth every other day, right, even though he had a strong relationship. It wasn't until he proved his loyalty to the first African American president that we begin to see those levels of trust grow.
How important is that, the fact that he was a good soldier to the first African-American president, Antoine?
I think it's critically important. I think that was the validator for Joe Biden's career, for the second leg of his career. And make no mistake, Joe Biden is one of very few national Democrats that can come to a place like South Carolina and campaign for a place where it will not be used against him. And secondly, the reason South Carolina is so politically sexy for the VP is because it's a place where he can put together a true coalition. While we talk about beating Donald Trump, I always tell Democrats we should be focused on a candidate who can put together the right coalition to take on Donald Trump and bring this party together. And I think Joe Biden's South Carolina, between African-Americans, progressive whites, and some in-the-middle-of-the-road Republicans, is the right type of coalition we're going to need to beat Donald Trump in November.
But African-Americans historically have been pretty pragmatic. They're not as emotional as the Bernie voters seem to be and invested that way. So I would think they are looking for somebody who can win. If it appears that Joe Biden can't win, will they abandon him? Will they jump ship and go to somebody who they think can and who will be in their best interest?
There's two things about African Americans. One, we've always been bold, not necessarily progressive. And two, we are very loyal to a fault. And so I don't see a need to abandon Joe Biden just because another section of the country or some of the media insiders want to write his political benediction to this point. I think African-American voters will actually shock the country and show their loyalty to Vice President Biden in the South Carolina primary. And I think that's going to send a strong signal to some of the Super Tuesday states, especially those who are in the South.
On Tuesday night in Columbia, Meg, Biden seemed to be responding to Donald Trump's allegation that Democrats have used and taken for granted African-American voters for a long time. Biden said, too often, your loyalty, your commitment, your support for this party has been taken for granted. I give you my word as a Biden that I never, ever, ever will. Was that a wise admission to make about Democrats?
It was certainly a strong statement on behalf of the VP, but let's remember South Carolina is critical to him, and for all the reasons that we've noted, it's in large part the black voting audience to whom he really needs to continue to appeal. He has said himself, high-ranking members of his campaign have said repeatedly and recently that they really need South Carolina to do exactly what Antoine was just talking about in terms of propel him into Super Tuesday. There are delegates at stake in South Carolina. There's not a ton. But there are a ton at stake in Super Tuesday. And for all of those reasons, he needs a strong performance in South Carolina to jump through and get to those states.
How many delegates are there at stake here?
54.
54. Isn't that almost exactly what the total gained so far?
65. Mm-hmm. 41 and 24.
So whoever takes South Carolina kind of goes to the at least second place, if not to the lead. If not Joe Biden, Gibbs, who? Here.
You know, I think he's certainly the favorite, but if you put me on the spot and made me predict, you know, I do think Bernie Sanders can get, you know, 20%, 25%. So if Biden were to falter and, you know, he somewhere drop below 20 and several of these other candidates were to pick up some people, maybe Bernie Sanders, you know, Tom Steyer has polled pretty well, but I just don't have a sense, you know, that was all before, you know, this thing sorted out a little bit.
There are certainly regional differences among Americans in the country, but we're all Americans. At least I think we are still.
I want to point out, when we say, you know, Biden falter, you know, don't think of that as just losing.
Right.
He needs to have a decisive win. We have talked about this multiple times. He has got to have double digits, preferably strong double digits. He could win South Carolina, but come out with a single digit win, and he is limping out. And, you know, it becomes desperate on Super Tuesday.
That's why the story coming out of South Carolina on February 29th is going to be threefold. It's going to be what Biden did. The second fold is going to be who was the fight for second place, because they're going to claim victory going into Super Tuesday for the purposes of momentum and money. And then the third story is going to be who's going to actually go away after South Carolina. If I were a betting man, which I'm not because I don't have money, Elizabeth Warren has the most to lose in South Carolina, because if her oxygen is cut off on February 29th, I don't see how she can go to rehab and keep herself going.
And some have said she should have already pulled out. Should she?
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't look, you know, certainly if she didn't do well in New Hampshire, this is not particularly friendly environment for Elizabeth Warren. And then she's got, you know, Bernie Sanders competing for many of the same voters.
She's having a hard time with funding. She just pulled down all of her ads in South Carolina and is shifting some of that money to Nevada and also to Maine, which is among the Super Tuesday states. So in terms of Elizabeth Warren's campaigns, she is making some of those decisions. But I want to go back to what Gibbs was just talking about in terms of Tom Steyer. He is one of those candidates who has been making a hard play for South Carolina, trying to appeal directly to black voters here. He's rolled out his HBCU policy here in the state. His criminal justice policy he rolled out in conjunction with a trip to South Carolina. His wife, Kat, just literally moved to South Carolina for the duration of the campaign, not just through our primary, but for as long as he's in the race. So he's got the money to do it, but he is making very visible strides to cut into the South Carolina support that I think directly he's aiming to take from Joe Biden in terms of the African-American community.
And he's going to become a push and pull candidate. He's going to push the policy agenda and push other people's support to the edge as much as he can. And he's going to pull support, I think, from various places in order to position him for second. This is a fight for second for Tom Steyer. It's very clear about his strategy.
So talk to me about South Carolina voters then, Gibbs, because, I mean, it seems to me that Bernie Sanders is not going to play as well here as perhaps he did in New Hampshire. But does he still speak at all to South? Are there people out there who want health care for all and their college loans forgiven, et cetera?
I think that there certainly are some people that want those things. You know, there's some positives for Bernie Sanders is that one of the things we found when we asked about the importance of the economy, or looked at exit polls that looked at the importance of the economy, South Carolina voters tended to talk more about the economy than voters, the typical Democratic voter. Bernie Sanders obviously has an economic appeal, but at the same token, you know, South Carolina Democrats tend to be a little more moderate. They tend to be a little more religious. They tend to be, you know, some things that, you know, Bernie Sanders, you know, is not going to appeal to quite as well. And so I think there's a real ceiling for Bernie Sanders in South Carolina.
So where does that put Pete Buttigieg?
So on Mayor Pete, you know, obviously faith is important for Republican voters and Democratic voters in South Carolina. He's probably talked the most about faith of any candidate. He's also a veteran, and this is a state with a lot of veterans. But, you know, this is a socially conservative state. I think the vast majority of Democratic voters are not going to think twice about casting considering that he's a gay 38-year-old.
They are not.
I think the vast majority of Democratic voters are not, but I think there are some in a conservative state like South Carolina that he's going to be hurt by that at some level, even in a Democratic primary. And so, and also think, you know, Buttigieg just, you know, has, you know, thing that hurts him in a lot of places is just his lack of experience. I mean, he's the mayor of a town about the size of Columbia or North Charleston, right. And that's that's not necessarily the best experience for being a president.
Well, also you have to look at kind of the big picture. You know, early on, I would have reporters ask me questions, say, you know, look at this Bernie Sanders rally, look at this Pete Buttigieg rally, it's just packed. And I would say, tell me about the race in it. Tell me about the race, and it would be all white. So you have to take a step back and say, what kind of momentum is really there? I've had a lot of young people say, oh, well, you know, among our group, you know, these candidates are doing great. We like Elizabeth, or we really like Bernie. And I'd say, well, that's great. But in the last two cycles, 18 to 24-year-olds made up about 6% of the electorate. So, you know, you could, if you turn out at that rate again, you could all vote one way, and it's not going to make a difference in the general election. So either things have to fundamentally change about who turns out, or we need to take a kind of a bigger picture view.
Right. Meg.
I think there's one thing that's important to consider when you talk about crowds, crowd sizes, and crowd demographics. I'm among those reporters who've been at those rallies for Mayor Pete and for Bernie and for Senator Warren and seen thousands of people, most of whom were pretty white, and thought, wow, what does this say for this candidate's support? You have to look beneath that, and I think that's just important for voters to consider. I've talked to many of the candidates themselves, as well as their strategists and people working on their campaigns, and mentioning that and saying, these crowds are really white, This state is not. What are you doing to actually campaign to many of these people who are going to be deciding who wins this primary? And there's so much that happens behind the scenes for the campaigns that I feel are probably doing it right or are doing it better than others in terms of things you don't see. There are many voters in this state who might fall into a certain demographic who don't have time to go sit at a rally for 4 hours on a work day or a Saturday, or they're working several jobs, or they just have something else they'd like to do with their family. So it's tough to look at those crowds and think, oh, well, this is indicative of necessarily this candidate's support.
Mayor Pete seems to have an African-American problem, not just here, but around the country. What can he do to convince African-Americans that he will be their advocate, their champion in the White House?
I think it's a problem that goes beyond this presidential nominating process, and I think he has a math problem. And there's no mathematical way possible to be the Democratic nominee without going through the heart and soul of the African American community. So I think he has a problem. But going back to crowds and what does that mean? If you look at some of the bigger crowds that have happened in South Carolina, they've always happened in border places. They've happened here in Rock Hill. We have a border of Charlotte. They happened in Augusta, Georgia, and Beaufort, and places like. And so a lot of the voters that show up are not necessarily South Carolina voters. And so while they pump up numbers, and they look sexy on the TV, and people think, wow, the enthusiasm is so high. Most of those people could not show up in a South Carolina voting booth and press the button if they wanted to. And so I think the devil is always in the details when you think about and when you see just a snapshot on TV or what a reporter may report. No disrespect, Mayor.
Yeah. None taken. And I will say, as that reporter at those rallies, sometimes it's really hard to find a South Carolina voter. And that's no offense
really?
To North Carolina. That's really who I want to talk to.
The one person who has not come up in this conversation a lot is Amy Klobuchar, and she has surged, evidently, at least.
Flomentum.
Flomentum, that's how it came up.
That's a good one, Anton.
She surged in New Hampshire. What are you hearing about Amy Klobuchar here in a state that has had a female governor, so they understand that women can lead?
I mean, I'm hearing that people like her, but they're just not sure. She hasn't spent a whole lot of time in South Carolina. She has been here for some big campaign events. She walked in the MLK march and spoke at the rally at King Day at the Dome. That was a big candidate event and an important one. But in terms of individual campaigning events, she hasn't really been here and spent the time. And so voters are aware of her, and they've seen what she's done in those other states. But as we've already mentioned, they don't really care, and they're not going to vote based on what those results are. So they feel like they really haven't had an opportunity to develop that relationship with her.
I would argue her surprise, showing in New Hampshire means that strategically she'll probably leapfrog us and focus a lot on Super Tuesday.
Yeah. Gibbs.
And we had her on campus. She was able to make it to the College of Charleston way fewer people than Bernie and Mayor Pete and Elizabeth. But what I will say is, she got a big bump from the debate. We do have a South Carolina debate. There is an opportunity for her to capture attention, and if she's able to have another really strong debate performances, may get some of those suburbanites in Greenville and Charleston and Columbia to come out and consider and vote for.
That debate's on February 25th. We're talking to Gibbs Knotts, professor of political science at the College of Charleston, Meg Kennard, associate of press, national political reporter, Scott Hoffman, political scientist here at Winthrop University, and Antoine Seawright, a Democratic strategist. We're coming to you from DiGiorgio Campus Center on the campus of Winthrop University. It's Charlotte Talks on WFH. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're on the campus of Winthrop University this evening with a stunning crowd in front of us to talk about the upcoming South Carolina primary and the role that this state will play in the picking of the next Democratic candidate for president. Scott Hoffman invited us here. He's the professor of political science at Winthrop University. Meg Kennard is a national political reporter with the Associated Press. Gibbs Knox is with the College of Charleston. And Antoine Seawright is a CBS News political analyst, among other things. And you wanted to follow up, Antoine, on Amy Klobuchar, because you say she has a tougher problem with African-American voters than Pete Buttigieg does.
They are dipping from the same bucket when it comes to their lack of support from the political concrete of this party. And that's been clear. And here's the other thing, and Amy's a friend, so I can say this. Here's the other problem that she's going to meet as she visits Nevada and South Carolina. This court case that's lingering over her head, in which an arguably an African-American was seen to be done wrong while she was a prosecutor. So just like Kamala Harris, former prosecutor, she's going to have to face her record. And trust me when I tell you, her enemies on this in this nominating process is going to use that against her to define her going into South Carolina, where African Americans are clear about they want a candidate they can trust.
Well, here's somebody else.
Advocates for their
here's
issue.
Somebody else we haven't talked about, Michael Bloomberg. He has the stop and frisk in his back pocket. So how are they viewing that?
Oh, I think the mayor will be defined, especially in the South Carolina debate, once he get on the debate stage. But keep in mind, he's also decided to press the skip button when it comes to South Carolina. So we will not really see the meat come off the bone when it comes to Mayor Bloomberg until Super Tuesday, if candidates have the resources to do so.
Buttigieg says that his win in Iowa and his strong showing in New Hampshire, and he does have the highest delegate count right now, that he's getting a second look from Black and Hispanic voters around the country. Is that true, do you think, Meg? And Scott, is it happening here? So I'll start with Meg.
I'm sure he is getting a second look. I think that every time I talk to Mayor Pete, you know, one of the things that he has said to me to try to explain perhaps the lack of support in the African-American community is people just don't know me yet. It's hard to say that at this point, particularly now that places have actually voted.
Yeah, everybody has TVs.
That introductory phase is over. I don't blame him for saying that maybe, you know, months ago and when he entered the race. But now, certainly, that introductory stuff has already happened. So he really does need to make some big strides to make up some of that ground. It's not just that he has less support than the former vice president, for example, who has always had high numbers. And when you talk to people from the mayor's campaign, they say, well, he started off at zero in the Black community, so at least he's higher than that now. The numbers may not be high, but they do say that that shows a sign of forward movement, at least, that there is support growing. But when you think about what the candidates that we've already discussed who aren't Joe Biden, like Tom Steyer, like Bernie Sanders, who really have been working to make those inroads and have been doing it apparently a little bit more successfully, then that is going to be a tough road still for Mayor Buttigieg in South Carolina.
So is he getting a second look from African-American voters here, Scott?
He's more likely to be getting a second look from Bennett supporters, Yang supporters, Cory Booker supporters, Kamala Harris supporters, than he is from folks who were behind and trusting Biden from the beginning among the African American community. Again, we'll see. I'll see in less than a week.
The mayor of Columbia, Steve Benjamin, an African American man, Gibbs, has endorsed Mike Bloomberg.
Right.
Who has not campaigned in South
Right.
Carolina.
You can see some commercials, but not, you know, he's not on the ballot in South Carolina. And a number of mayors across the country have endorsed Bloomberg. Bloomberg is in this post-Trump era, it's unprecedented to skip these four early primary states and really bank it all on Super Tuesday. You know, we'll know in about a month or two whether that works, but it is a very different strategy and takes somebody with, you know, billions of dollars to even attempt something like
that. And he's willing to spend it all. And one of the reasons that the mayor of Columbia decided to endorse him, I think, is because he has the money, the resources, he used the word resources, right, to go the distance.
Right.
Which means he could go the distance even if he loses all of the primary.
Well, he could go the distance, but I mean, imagine a scenario where it's Bloomberg versus Bernie Sanders for the fight for the nomination. I mean, you know, and talking about tearing the party apart, you know, somebody who has, you know, has billions and billions of dollars.
But he doesn't care, does he? He's a Republican.
Well, I think Bloomberg has said he would support Sanders. Sanders has said he would support Bloomberg. But that doesn't mean Sanders supporters are going to support Bloomberg, and it doesn't mean Sanders supporters are going to go out and vote. And so it's potentially a real dynamite for the Democratic Party. Could really cause a lot of problems.
And let me ask the Democrat on this panel. The Democratic Party has a front runner who is an independent. He caucuses with the Democrats in the Senate, but he doesn't call himself a Democrat. He's not. You got Michael Bloomberg running for president on the Democratic ticket. He's a Republican. Why do you guys let this happen?
Donald Trump is the president. What a time to be alive. we're a diverse party. We brand ourselves as a big tent party. And I'm one of the very few Democrats in the South who welcomes the idea of the big tent. Whether you're a billionaire or whether you're independent from Vermont, if you advocate for our ideas, and if you want to make this little idea called America Work, I think Democratic voters will give you a shot, unlike the other side, in which they will not give you a shot. And I think we're seeing that being molded and shaped in this nomination process. But I also want to remind you, just because you start out a certain way does not mean you will end up a certain way. And while the momentum may say one thing today, by the time we get to that convention in Wisconsin, it could be a different temperature and a different tune in this party.
I'm thinking that I'm right about this, Meg, that this primary will be the first time that we've had so many candidates on the ballot in the South Carolina primary. Usually the field has been narrowed down here. Mm-hmm. Since we have so many people, who has the best organization in the state?
Wow. Asking me to grade the campaigns, that's tough. I will say that, the campaigns who have been working the hardest and developing out probably the most broadly, Bernie Sanders is certainly one. He's had an infrastructure that he was able to maintain to some degree, not a campaign infrastructure, but obviously through the offshoot of his 2016 campaign, through our revolution, he has maintained high visibility and hired up very quickly. As we know from the previous cycle, his fundraising has also stayed strong, and so he's had the money to do that. Elizabeth Warren did that pretty largely as well, although, as we've already talked about, her money is starting to become an issue, and so a lot of the big footprint that she's made in places like this is starting to be tough, but it's well organized, and it just remains to be seen exactly how much longer she's going to be able to fund that out. Again, I gotta say, Tom Steyer has a huge ground game organization in South Carolina.
And he spent $14 million in advertising. I don't know what the media markets normally bring in South Carolina, but that sounds like a big chunk of change.
It's a big time. You can't watch a YouTube video. You can't get on the internet without seeing Tom Steyer. And then when you want to take a break and go out and check your mail, there's a flyer from Tom Steyer. So it's unbelievable. But it's not just on to Meg's point. He's also invested in a ground game that he's putting the money into the state. It's just, he really did nothing in Iowa and New Hampshire, so he doesn't have a lot to build on.
But I see it a different way. I see Tom Steyer making South Carolina an investment, not an expense. And too often in my party, we treat certain segments of the voting bloc as an expense, not an investment. I see it that way. And you asked Meg the question, but I'm going to answer too, about what does a successful campaign look like in South Carolina. I think a successful campaign in this state, and this is true for Super Tuesday, is one that's able to demonstrate their ability to do high tech and high touch. So yes, do all the fancy things like texting and phone calls and all that, but good old-fashioned grassroots politics, knocking on doors, showing up at worship services, going to events, making sure you're going to Walmart and registering voters in the parking lot and harassing college students about registering them to vote. That is how Barack Obama was successful in 2008, and believe it or not, that's how my former client Hillary Clinton was successful here in 2016. It was a combination of a high-tech, high-touch effort.
There's also something that we need to say about Tom Steyer's effort, though, that is a little bit different in that he has hired not one, but two high-ranking, powerful, long-term members of the state legislature to serve as national senior advisors on his campaign.
He just hired State Representative Gilda Cobb Hunter.
That's called high touch.
And she is the longest-serving member in the legislature in the Carolina House.
Yeah.
And one of the most influential black lawmakers in the state. She does not endorse candidates, but she's working for him. Isn't that an endorsement?
I mean, I would say so. Representative Cobb Hunter, you're right, always is very adamant in saying that she doesn't endorse, that she doesn't play this, and she keeps her vote to herself. And she still very well may keep her vote to herself, but by being hired on by a campaign and actively working to advise and help someone win the primary, I think you can read a lot into that. The same with State Representative Jerry Govan, who is the chair of the South Carolina Legislative Black Caucus. He's been working for the Steyer campaign for months and has been serving as an advisor and is very much supporting him.
So we have two high-profile African-Americans, Scott, working for Tom Steyer in the state that Joe Biden's hopes and dreams depend on, and a lot of that depends on African-American votes. What message are these two people sending to African-American voters about Tom Steyer versus Joe Biden?
That I need a job, and I'm going to work for his... you know, somebody who's going to pay
me. Is it that crass? Come on.
Yeah. Well, I mean, endorsements matter, but they often matter less than people think they do. There really are, you know, kind of signaling, but at this late date, saying, oh, you know, less than a couple of weeks before it goes in, this amounts to a signal for black support. That's not what this amounts to.
And just because they are working for a candidate, does that mean that strategy is going to work for the candidate in terms of the winning at the ballot box? And I spoke with Meg about endorsements a couple of months ago, and I said to her on the record, endorsements bring some of your friends, but they bring all of your enemies. And that's the one thing I learned. And the sheep does not always follow the shepherd. So while an endorser may feel like they have a certain following and all of their persons are going to follow them, that doesn't always play out. Ask Hillary Clinton, who I worked for in 2008 right. in this state.
Some say that Tom Steyer is campaigning differently or talking in some way differently to African-American voters than some of the other candidates have been doing or have traditionally done. I'm not sure whether I should ask you this, Meg, or you, Gibbs, so you can both take a shot at it. Do you think that's true?
I do think that he's making a very direct appeal. He has spent a lot of time on HBCU campuses, and he's doing exactly what we were discussing in that whole conversation about crowds and these big rallies and crowd sizes. He's doing what voters tell me they want to see, particularly African-American voters, which is go to where they are, to have small small campaign events, smaller style town halls, to hear their concerns, to be in their churches, to be in their small groups. That I wrote a big piece about this at the very beginning of this campaign, about the whole notion of campaigning in that way. And he certainly, I'm not saying he like took my advice because I wasn't handing it out, but he is doing what people told me that they really felt candidates should do to be successful here.
Gibbs?
I agree. Yeah, I mean, I totally agree. He's really taking the state seriously and really going out and having those one-on-one conversations and building those relationships.
Well, but also to the point of, you know, strategy doesn't necessarily work. I mean, Meg talked about how strong Elizabeth Warren's ground game was, and she made a point of trying to reach out to African-American women who are clearly the crown jewel of the South Carolina Democratic presidential primary, and that's the right strategy. She had a good ground game, and she failed.
And Pete, I mean, Joe Biden certainly has, it's his vote caucus to lose. The black vote is his to lose, I suppose. But Pete Buttigieg has spent $2 million in this state, and he's still not resonating with black voters. He's not moving the needle. And Brady Court Garvin, I think she's now working, she's a former chairman of the Charleston Democrats, says it's not for lack of fishing for support. It's just that folks aren't biting. Why not?
Well, again, black voters are loyal, and Pete's problem is not just the surface things that we talk about. It goes back to his days of being a mayor in South Bend, Indiana.
Right.
And so his problems are not just wide, they're very deep. And I think they are playing out in this nomination process. And again, this is a trust election. And so if the mayor does not have trust with African-American voters, you can sure as hell believe they're not going to support him for the highest office in the land.
But in your book, Gibbs, you say that the most interesting thing about South Carolina is what does not matter. You say candidates with fundraising advantages, those who have run for elected office previously, those who have campaigned in a past primary in the state, do not have an advantage over less experienced and underfunded candidates. So to me, that means Pete Buttigieg has the edge.
Yeah, I mean, it's a small state. You can do it. You can do an event in Greenville. You can go to lunch in Columbia and then do an event in Charleston. It is a place that candidates who have less money, who have less name recognition, can do well. And, you know, Donald Trump didn't spend as much money as Jeb Bush in South Carolina, but was able to end up ultimately winning the 2016 Republican contest. And so it's still that's a case that some people want to have a big national primary. We might change the way we select nominees and going into the future. But I will say there are some positives about having smaller states vet candidates and giving candidates more of an opportunity to really go one-on-one with different.
Democrats hope to attract disaffected Republicans across the country. Are there moderate Republicans in South Carolina who might consider voting for a Democrat?
I think so. I mean, look at the South Carolina 1 district with Joe Cunningham. I mean, there's a lot of people who had loyally voted Republican. SC1, Trump won by 13 points in 2016, and Joe Cunningham had one of the biggest upsets in 2018. You know, there are people out there who, you know, like I said, probably voted for John Kasich or Marco Rubio. Rubio that are thinking about weighing in without a Republican nomination and being dissatisfied with some of the stuff they see from Donald Trump.
What's the chance, very quickly, like 10 seconds, what's the chance, Scott, of a contested convention?
You ask the Democratic expert
quickly,
here. But
10 seconds. Yeah.
100%.
Yeah. 100%?
100%.
Oh, this is going to be fun. All right, Antoine Seawright, Democratic strategist, Gib Knotts, professor of political science at the College of Charleston, Meg Kennard, national reporter with the political reporter for the Associated Press, and Scott Huffman, who has hosted us tonight, professor of political science at Winthrop University. Thank you all for the hour. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to Mazda's focus to ensure every element of a car is designed around the driver. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.